Okay, we're doing Megillah. We're up to Chav Zayin Amud Beis, the two dots in the middle of the page. We said in the Mishnah, V'chachamim Omrim Mochim Otom Im Kar Olam. The rabbis say you could sell a shul, a permanent sale, and then the rabbi stipulated you have to say that he cannot make the shul into one of four things. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, we know he was the sharp student of Shmuel. Mutar la'adam la'ashtin mayim b'tochdal demot shel tefillah. One may relieve himself of his fluids within 4 footsteps of prayer. Now the question is, what did he mean by that? Amar Rav Yosef, my kamashmalan. Rav Yosef said, what's he teaching us? Tanina. That's a brisa, Rav Yehuda Omer. We have in our Mishnah, I'm sorry, Rav Yehuda said, mochinotan l'shum chatzir. You sell it with the specified intent that it should be a yard. Velokach, ma sheyotzei yaseh. And the purchaser, well, he could do whatever he wants with it afterwards. So you see, you could. And even the rabbis, they only prohibited selling a shul to be a bathroom. Because a shul has permanent holiness. But the 4 footsteps away of the shul, that doesn't have a set holiness, no, they don't say that. Now, what does it mean, 4 footsteps of prayer? So the idea here is, you just finished praying, and the second later, you're going to relieve yourself. You're out on a hiking trip, so you're davening out in the wilderness. You finish Shmona Esrei, you finish your mincha, and you turn around and relieve yourself. Is that permissible or not? We say within 4 footsteps of prayer, so it's like you just left talking God. So is that okay or not? Or do you have to wait the 4 footsteps? So Rav Yehuda said you could. Rav Yosef said, isn't that obvious? We said he could even sell a shul for whatever, and then it'll be whatever you want. And even the rabbis, they only said a shul that has permanence is prohibited from being a bathroom. But the 4 footsteps of where you happen to pray, that doesn't have any permanent holiness. Tani Tana Kamed Rav Nachman. So the Tana said in front of Rav Nachman, Hamitpalel Machik Dal Damot Umashtin. He quoted the following brisa: a person who is in prayer should distance himself 4 footsteps from his place of prayer and then relieve himself. And a person who relieved himself should distance himself 4 footsteps and then pray. He said, I understand why a guy who relieved himself has to walk 4 footsteps away and only then start praying. Tanina. You have a brisa. The Mishnah says in Brachos that one has to distance oneself from urine or human feces 4 footsteps, assuming you don't see it and you don't smell it, etc. 4 footsteps away before you can pray. He said, but what's the idea behind saying that a guy who's prayed should walk away 4 footsteps and then relieve himself? If that's so, then all the roads of Narda are holy, because there isn't a corner where people haven't stood and said their Shmona Esrei. So you can't relieve yourself anywhere. And in those days, it wasn't easy to find a bathroom. The Talmud says people would relieve, they would urinate in the public place. That was like common practice. It wasn't so modest, it wasn't nice. The Talmud says you shouldn't do that, you should go to a more modest place. But if people had to relieve themselves, they would even do it in public of liquids. So he said to him, you know, according to you, you can't go to any pit stop all along Narada. So how could you say that? Tani yishet. But rather, what you have to say is that it's not that the location is holy. They have to walk away 4 footsteps from wherever someone prayed Shmona Esrei. But the idea is, you have to pause the time it would take you to walk 4 footsteps, and then you could relieve yourself. The idea is, 4 footsteps is like the amount of time that we say your mind is still connected to the prayer. Pause before you go and relieve yourself. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand that a guy who just relieved himself, he should wait 4 footsteps because there are always drops that didn't finish. So we say, wait till everything's finished, wait 4 footsteps after you finish before you go pray. But a guy who's praying, why does he have to wait this time? Because for the time it takes you to walk 4 footsteps, the nature of people is that after prayer, their lips are still moving. Their mind is still connected. Their lips are still moving. They haven't really finished their prayer for the first 4 footsteps, the first like 2-3 seconds after you finish prayer. It's like your lips are still on autopilot. They're still moving. So let yourself land from your prayer and then go and relieve yourself. Zalfan Siman. Shalu Talmidav et Rabbi Zakkai. Now we have fascinating stories. And the stories go in the order of Zalfan. The students asked Rabbi Zakkai, Damar Rachta Yamin, what caused you to have such longevity? He said, I never relieved myself within 4 footsteps of prayer. Oh, so now we see the connection. Velo kiniti shem lechaveri, and I never gave a nickname to any of my friends. Velo bitalti kiddush hayom, and I never missed kiddush, which wasn't easy. Imaz keina haitali, I had an old mother. Pam achat macha kippah shebrosha ve'veah li kiddush hayom. One time we were so impoverished, we couldn't afford wine for kiddush. So what'd she do? She took the little cover they used to wear on their head under the scarf. They had a scarf, and then they had another scarf on top of it. And this was like a basic attire that a woman wore. And she sold her head covering just so that we would have the money to make kiddush. So I was very careful about this, to make kiddush the way I should. And my mother also partook in this care to make sure we would always have wine for kiddush. And it wasn't easy. You know, in those days, if you didn't have money, it meant you were hungry. Today, if we don't have money, it means we buy one less SIM card, right? So, Tana. So we have a tradition, Kshemeta, when this mother passed away, she was a very wealthy woman by the end of her days. She was an old woman when this story happened, but God blessed her, and we have on tradition that by the time she died, she had 300 flasks of wine to leave over as inheritance for him, which was no small amount. That was just part of the inheritance. Shemet Hu, and when he died, he left his kids 3,000 flasks of wine. Rav Huna Havasar Rita Vekai Kamei Dirav. Rav Huna bound himself with some kind of string. He didn't have a belt. One day he comes into class without a belt. He ties his pants with a rope. So he tied his robe with a rope, and he came before Rav. Amali Mayai. So Rav asked him, "Hey, Rav Huna, what's going on here? Where's your belt?" He said to him, "You know, I didn't have money for kiddush this Shabbos. And I gave my belt, my sash, as collateral. And with that money, I was able to buy wine for kiddush." It may be the will of Hashem that you will be covered with fine silk. Ki ichlal Rabba Brei Rav Huna. When Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, was getting married, so in those days they had long weddings. Inish Gutza Hava. Rav Huna was short. Gutza means short. Rav Huna was a short man. Gana Apulya. He went to sleep on the couch over there. They had some kind of bed, and there was the wedding. It was a long wedding. He was tired, Rav Huna. He'd been learning all day and all night. So he took a nap. He's an old man. He's marrying off his son. He's been working hard. You see, he was impoverished. So now, after years, he's marrying off his son. And now he's not so impoverished, as we will see. So he went to sleep. He's a short, small man. He went to sleep on this bed. Atyin bante vechalate. His daughters and daughters-in-law came into the room. They didn't see him lying on the bed. They took off all their scarves and all their precious different stuff that they were wearing, and they covered him up with fine silk. So here Rav's blessing came true. He's lying there on the sofa. He wakes up and he's all covered in fine silk. His daughters and daughter-in-law, oh, he's made it, right? He's funding everyone's fine silk. Now, Rav was still around. Rav gave him this blessing. Shamarav v'ikpid. Rav heard that his blessing came true. People were talking, oh, you heard what happened? Rav, years ago, he blessed Rav Huna. Back when Rav Huna was still tying his belt with a rope because he couldn't afford Kiddush, he gave him this blessing. And look at where he is now. He married off his kids. Everyone was talking. Rav got wind of it. He got upset. Amar, he said, my time alo amartli ki berchatich lechen lemar. He said to Rav Huna, you, Rav Huna, when I blessed you, you see, my blessing came true. You should have said, and so should be to the master. You should have blessed me back. If you would have mirrored the blessing back to me, I would have been rich today too. You see, Rav would have been happy to be rich also. It's not a bad thing to be rich. So Rav held it against him. He said, you know, you should have said B'chein Lamar. Now, in our day, Rav Shapiro Zatzal, whenever he'd give someone a blessing, he'd say, Tomav B'chein Lamar, Tomav B'chein Lamar. He'd always tell, say B'chein Lamar. Wish me back the same blessing I just gave you based on this Gemara. His students asked him, they asked Rav Lez ben Shemua, what do you attribute your longevity to? He said, you know, I never made a shortcut in shul, and I never walked into the academy and walked between the students, and then it looked like I was walking on everyone's heads. Well, there are different interpretations to what exactly this means, but at any rate, he never walked in a way that would indicate that he was looking down at his students. And I never did Birchas Kohanim without making the blessing on that mitzvah. And here, okay, so all the commentaries discuss what's the big deal in that. Okay. What do you guys say? Another 2 minutes or do we stop here? Sure. Yeah? 2 more minutes? Shalut al midavet Rabbi Preida. The students asked Rabbi Preida, b'me rach tayamim, to what do you attribute your longevity? Satosus automatically asks, what's the question? The Gemara tells us in Erevin that he had a student who couldn't catch things. The Talmud says he'd have to review the lesson 400 times with that student. And one time, he finishes the 400th time, and the student says, Rabbi, I didn't get it. So this is what happened. So he said, well, this time I knew you were in a rush, so every time I thought you're not going to say it again, so I couldn't concentrate. So he said, okay, so now let's sit down and concentrate. I'm going to do it another 400 times. And he sat down and reviewed it another 400 times, and a heavenly voice came out and said, ah, you will merit to live 400 years. It's fitting for you that you will live in this world 400 years. And from here we see an important concept, that sometimes we think that if we invest in a mitzvah, we might lose out on life. We have to know. Maybe in Shemaim, that's the exact reason why they give us life. When Rav Moshe Feinstein was an old man, so he became ill, and he couldn't learn anymore. And all day long, people would come to him for blessings. And he once commented, he said, it could be the only reason God left me on this planet is to give blessings. Maybe that's what I'm here for. So they asked Rav Preida, why do you have longevity? And Tosfos asked, what's the question? You know, we know why he had longevity, that heavenly voice. So Tosfos says, could be he didn't know that. Only afterwards, when he lived to 400 years, then people understood that this was the cause. So they asked Rav Preida, to what do you attribute your longevity? Amar lehem, he said, Mi'amai lo kidmani adam lebeit ha-midrash. No one ever came to the Beis Medrash before me. I was always there first. Ve'lo berachti lifnei kohen. And I never blessed in front of a kohen, even though technically Chacham precedes a kohen. I always gave the honor to the kohen. Ve'lo achalti mi'beimash lo umu matnotea. And I never ate from an animal that they didn't give the gifts to the kohen first. Rav Yochanan taught, it's prohibited to eat from an animal before the gifts were given to the kohen. Rav Yitzchak taught, it's as though you eat the fruit before you take off the portions for the kohen. And the halacha is not like him, but he was stringent. He worried about that opinion. He never made a blessing before a kohen. Wait a second, is that right? So the Gemara says, the name of the Malyute, is that right? Rav Yochanan said, if a Talmud Chacham forgoes his honor, even for a Kohen Gadol, but he's not learned, so he's putting down the Torah. There's a reason why he should go first. And if he puts down the Torah, then that's equivalent to asking for death. Because he causes people to hate Torah. People think, oh, you see, Torah isn't what's valuable in this world. Because you see, a guy who's learned is forgoing his Torah to honor someone else. So what's the chachma in letting a kohen bench first? He shouldn't have done that. Answers the Gemara, ki kamariu bishavin. He meant in a situation where we were equals. So then I'd say, you're the kohen, you go first. But if they weren't equals, then he wouldn't put down his Torah. He would accept the honor of benching first, because he had no right to put down his Torah and say, no, 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 you go first, because that makes people misunderstand the way the world works. Okay, we'll pick up here tomorrow, Bezalel Hashem.